We're back, and Case, I just heard from Kelly. If you, you reach him. Yeah, he just sent me a text. Yeah. Kelly Breen, I think. Yeah, call him back now. He just texted me because he's at the sale. So, and of course, while we got a second, as Casey reaches for Kelly, we'll mention the sale and we'll follow actually right after Kelly Breen. We'll go to Mig, who's also down there, as I said, and sale today. Looking like it should be pretty good. The attendance certainly is there, and people are eager to get the 2-year-olds into circulation. And the expectation is that the obvious players, the horses that breeze the best and expected to command the top dollar. The problem, has been that middle market. And, I thought a quote from one of the previews. I think Ron Mitchell had a piece, and he talked to Joe Pickerel. And Joe, I thought, had a really central concern, which is the pinhookers, that bought prospective runners, they had a no knowledge or no way to expect that what has transpired was going to transpire. So anybody that paid a premium and speculated on yearlings and paid top dollar, they're in the seemingly a precarious position, and that's the concern. So be watching with interest. 11 o'clock things start, and there were quite a few of the top hips that zipped a 10 flat. There were a dozen of them, and about half were, I think, yeah, five of the 12 were first crop sires. Kelly Breen joins us, and he's at Timonium. And Kelly, a quick sale thought before we talk about Firenze Fire. Good traffic, and I think people got their fingers crossed.
It's a lot easier for traveling, for sure.
Kelly, I'm curious, how many clients are you there buying for?
Primarily two, one for sure, and the other one is just watching the market.
Gotcha. And what kind of budgets do you operate in?
Someone was beeping in here while you were calling or while you were talking. Say again.
What kind of budget do you bring to this sale?
I am a bargain budget guy. I do not have many high-end clients, so if a $50,000 range, maybe a little higher if we really like a horse, but my pockets are not as deep as some of these other guys here.
And then in terms of, this is a sale that historically has had a strong, strong bench of regional breeds, whether Pennsylvania, Maryland, New York. How in tune, even Jersey breds, how in tune are you to pick off those kinds that you can bring? Because you operate, you're not afraid to ship really anywhere up and down the Eastern Seaboard.
In the past, I've bought Jersey breds from the sale, done well with them, maybe a New York bred or two. You do have the clientele that it's not that far for a New Yorker to jump on the turnpike and come on down. So there is a little bit more Northeast vibe around here, Maryland people and Jersey people. So it's our own little smorgasbord as compared to going to Ocala and you have a lot of Florida bread.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, wish you good luck at the sale, and we'll be watching the tote board and the sales ledger. Let's talk about Ron Lombardi's Homebred, and now five for Renze Fire, second off the off the change, and coming into your barn, and give us a feel for how you reacted after the Carter. He seemed kind of even and maybe just a tad dull. Maggie Wolfendale pointed out that he looked much fitter and sharper coming in to Saturday.
Well, she knows. No, I'm only kidding. The horse, if he needed a race, possibly. If I skipped a race and just went right into the True North, would he have been ready? I got to learn a little bit more about the horse, running first time out in the Carter. Some of the things, idiosyncrasies of the horse. Not a mudder, if we can avoid running in the mud, I think that that's one of the things that we might have learned. The other part about it was the post wasn't helping. I don't think anybody from down inside that day ran any good. There was one horse all day long, and Joel Rosario rode it, and he oversent the horse just to get him into contention, but the one post was horrible that day. And, to say that maybe the horse did need it, and he ran an awesome race on Saturday.
He's been particularly good at both Saratoga and at Belmont, and so it has to be a little bit of and even at Aqueduct. Going into this, and of course, the whole complexion of the race changes when Dale is forced to scratch Promises Fulfilled. How did that change, your and IRAD's approach?
Well, my approach was I thought we would have been sitting a little bit closer, and I'm glad I didn't speak too much into it with IRAD, because he had his own vision on it, and he came back and he says that horse likes to sit off the horses, and without Dale in there, I thought we were going to be, the speed if we wanted to be. But when you have a little bit of a speed duel and you could sit off of it, he rode him to perfection. He knows the horse. Couldn't have worked out much better. He was so patiently ridden, it made me a little leery as to when is he going to let him run? But it all worked out. It was awesome. When he asked the horse, he kicked. Like I said, I just to watch it, it was poetry in motion.
Wins and wins clear, and after he overhauled Yorkton and Stan the Man, they basically finished up chasing him home, and Firenze Fire adds another graded stake win. The obvious question, Kelly, for you, taking this horse and any others from Ron, and Ron put in such a difficult position by the situation surrounding Jason Service. Talk a little bit about it. This had to be really satisfying for Ron, too, to, get him back in the winner's circle.
Yeah, I think that it validates the horse. I know Ron is anticipating putting the horse to stud, and like to say it validates that this horse is a top-notch horse. He made it to the Derby as a three-year-old. He's still running at five. He's still running, exceptionally fast races. So this was a big key race for the horse's future, for Ron's future. Nothing but good things right now, and as long as we can keep them going in the right direction, we'd really love to try and get this horse to the Breeders' Cup.
Breeders' Cup down the road, and distance-wise, what's your feel now? Now that you've run him twice, and you're seeing a little bit more, and you'll probably continue to learn the opportunities at Saratoga. You've got the grade ones that feature on the calendar. And, you know, with his record as well at Saratoga, you got to be, you know, looking forward to that. But, you know, distance-wise, he's been successful at both six, six and a half, and seven. Do you sense that there's a better sprint distance for him, you know, one than another?
To me, I really feel as if he could go a mile, which could possibly be his best distance. But six and a half was pretty good on Saturday. So I don't know. Maybe six is a little short for him. He's a little bit older. Maybe he doesn't want to go in 20 and four-fifths or 21 flat, and he can sit off the pace and still come and get him. You know, I'm just reading between the lines and trying to figure the horse out myself, but he's a nice horse. He's a massive, just muscular horse, and I'm glad that he showed up. He looks the part, put it that way.
Well, and we look forward to speculating about the grade ones at Saratoga. Is that the plan?
If we have the end of July is on our map at Saratoga. You know, me and Ron were already talking a little bit about it, and we'll try and figure out what's best for the horse and see how the horse is before we, you know, really pinpoint anything else.
How many? I know that you ran one at Delaware the other day. I saw in the entries that Allowance, Gin and Platonic. How many do you have with Ron?
How many? That's a good question. There's 20 horses, something like that.
Wow! Wow! Yeah. Nice! Nice! All right. Well, then obviously filling up the.
He's been putting together a pretty decent broodmare band. So if that all goes into fruition, that he will have a couple of nice mares to throw at Frenzy Fire.
Oh, that's tremendous. Well, happy for you, as always. Kelly, let's actually get in. You also had Valedictorian run on Saturday, right?
Yes. She might have been a little over her head, but she seemed to come out of the race good, and we'll take her back to Monmouth Park and regroup.
Well, and speaking of Monmouth, that was an adjusted game, and certainly, you know, some heady competition in that spot. But mentioning Monmouth, opening day on Friday, obviously the delayed start to the season, but give us a feel for, you know, the summer.
You know, there's a couple of new things where they're starting on Friday to have a twilight start, 5 o'clock start. You know, something a little bit different. You know, might put a California into the mix for gambling. I think it's a good thing to try something a little bit different. We do have fans right now planned on coming, and everything sounds good to me, so I can't wait for it.
Well, and we'll obviously check in with Dennis Drazen and with John Himes and the team, and looking forward to the summer at Monmouth, and particularly the fact you mentioned the fans, you know, being able for players and fans, you know, to attend is going to be, you know, a pleasure, and for Eastern Seaboard, you know, for those of us out here that probably aren't going to get to Saratoga the way things are shaping up, it'd be nice to, you know, go spend a couple of days on the shore and get down to Monmouth.
Well, it's going to do one of two things. Either it'll put a little bit of pressure on New York to say Jersey has fans, or it's going to be people are going to go to Monmouth Park if Saratoga does not have fans because they want to see live racing. So there's some pressure.
Well, it's funny, last week and in advance of, you know, with that news when it came out, and the fact that if they can operate at 25% physical capacity, you know, the capacity is 60 at Monmouth, and so Dennis said, you know, we could have 15,000. And so other than Haskell Day, you know, that should accommodate everybody. if anybody has not been to Monmouth, certainly, you know, make a trip and make a plan, because you will just be as enchanted, certainly as I, you know, as I have always been. I've said many times it was the first racetrack that I could attend on a near daily basis, and I just loved it. And of course, Julie Crone's going to be around as the agent for Ferren Peterson, and so you'll get to rub elbows with Julie again, for those that remember when she dominated, and you certainly remember when she dominated.
Julie won, I think, her first 3 out of 5 races for me. So I'm a Crone fan, and the girl actually breezed a couple of horses for me this morning. But I have to make some arrangements real quick with my van guy, Andy Simoff, who keeps on beeping in here. So let me make sure.
Call Andy.
My van is on time, and which he usually is, but he mustn't know that I'm on the phone, because, or he knows that it keeps on beeping through. But I got Andy trying to make sure
his
business is tight and his I's are dotted and his T's are crossed. So let me call up Andy before he has a connection.
Go ahead.
Here, and
Send him our regards. I'm going to text him. I'm going to say, Kelly's on with me. Kelly Green,
right.
Well done. Thanks. Congratulations. Thanks. Good luck at
Take
the sale.
Care, Steve. All right. Bye-bye.
Kelly Breen, and that's funny. I'm going to text. I'm going to text Andy Simoff. That's great, Andy. See, and that one of the reasons we highly recommend Simoff Transport. Andy does a great job. that's great. I think waiting for us is Rich Migliori as well. Meg, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Just wrapping up with Kelly Breen, and I wanted to get to you today. You're down at Timonium as well, and I'll ask you before we recap the weekend and all the action on America's Day at the Races on Fox and MSG Plus. Some pre-sale thoughts. What's your feel so far in terms of attendance and interest level, and you know how things are going to shake out?
Well, the attendance is very, very strong. We got a lot of people here, a lot of excitement. My son Joe's been down here all week. He was here for the Breeze Up shows, and he says it's been like this all week. So, obviously, people are excited to have a sale. You know, we've had so many interruptions in our normalcy in life in general. But, hey, Rick, how are you? Good. You guys all right? Sorry, Steve. You know, it's just great to have a horse sale, and a lot of buzz. I'm on the back stretch right now. I was just saying hi to Rick Schaffberg, so I apologize.
Not at all. Not at all. We love it. That's the kind of activity that you know, that the sale provokes, and that's why it's fun to check in down there. And we'll be keeping tabs. Who have you been impressed with, by the way, watching Breezes in terms of the new you know, the first crop stallions? Who's caught your eye?
You know, it's interesting. I didn't get to be here live for them, and so I've just been watching video,
right.
And it's always, I think, a little bit more difficult for me when I don't get to be here live for it. But, you know, we were doing the Fox show, so I couldn't make it. But, I mean, all
sure.
in all, I'm trying to look here real quick in my book because we got some notes. Me and Joe are kind of working this. You know who has really, to me, kind of stood out? The Spitester, the Spitestown
mm-hmm.
guy. He throws a really good-looking, very balanced horse, very athletic. I think that there are a couple of those that could probably, you know, maybe get, like, this has always been a buyer's sale anyway. And I think this year, maybe more than ever, it's going to be a buyer's sale. I think you can buy a good athlete here for not a tremendous amount of money.
Well, and, you know, my first introduction to this sale on the two-year-old front came via Mike Trombetta. And, you know, going back, I don't know, 10, 12, 14 years. And at that time, Timonium was a bit of a, not an afterthought, but because it was later in the spring, and because of the high-profile select opportunity at the old Calder sale, Timonium was a bit, you know, was thought of as a bit of a flea market, in essence, you know? It used to be a bargain hunter's delight, but then things changed, and you know, suddenly, you know, seven-figure sellers the last several years, and you know, consigners weren't, you know, depending on the development of their you know, pin hooks and so forth, they weren't afraid to catalog here, and particularly this year, I mean, that seems to be the storyline, Rich, that the top horses will sell for, you know, big money, and, you know, where are we on the middle market? And that's the challenge. That's the ongoing challenge in the bloodstock trade period.
No, absolutely. But yeah, people did catch on. I mean, a lot of good horses have come out of this sale over the years, and I've always you know, thought if horses, you know, because this is a bull ring, when you get these two-year-olds that are handy enough to run around this first turn after they're, you know, galloping out on their brain, I think it points out who's an athlete, who's handy, you know, who's got that shiftiness that you want, especially in a young horse. So, this is a terrific sale. I'm excited about it. You know, the other horse, too, I have to talk about Run Happy. I've been liking them since I started seeing them as weanlings. And there are a couple in this sale, and they're just really big, strong, solid horses, really good bone on them. You know, everybody talks about the breezes. I like watching a horse walk, and if they got that really nice swinging walk, they can almost point themselves out at just walking down the shed row.
Should also note that a very timely first winner for Brody's Cause yesterday at Woodbine. And so that probably a nice little headline that may have caught some eyes. And Brody's Cause, who was a big hit at OBS a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, you know, they always have those add-ons to the catalog page. So we'll be hearing a lot of that today for sure. Actually ran into a bunch of guys last night. John Kimmel's down here. But a real strong attendance. Ron Ellis is here from California. It's exciting, and it's a really good atmosphere, too. It just you feel like everybody's anticipation. And I think just everybody being able to kind of get together and see each other a little bit, you know?
No doubt. Well,
speaking of John
looking
Kimmel,
forward to...
John Kimmel right here. I'm on the radio. I'll give you a plug.
It's funny. Last week, the week before, when I was at Belmont Thursday and Friday, you know, there was only a handful of horsemen around, but John was one. And you know, it's a challenge. How many with everybody wearing face coverings? You know, you got to look a couple of different times, Rich, to make sure you know you figure out who it is you're looking at.
Absolutely, I think it'd be a great time to be a bank robber, but. John, for your listeners, okay, this is for your listeners only. John Kimmel last night told me he's got the best crop of two-year-olds he's had in 20 years. So wow. Something to keep an eye on as he starts unveiling some of these.
I appreciate it, and I also know that he got turned away on a couple of horses that he really liked at OBS, where he ended up, you know, he was kicking himself about a few horses that he didn't go one bid further. So he must be confident, and we'll see about the 2-year-olds when we get to Saratoga. Well, before we get to Saratoga, Rich, we got another big weekend coming, including the Met and Manhattan and more. And then let's talk about the weekend. And I you know, I enjoyed the TV coverage and, you know, watching a number of stars. And this has been a steady parade week by week of star performers. Some of them are emergent types like Gamine. Tis the Law, of course, you know, following through last week to win the Belmont. You know, she's a Julie the week before that in the Ogden Phipps. And then Saturday, we just talked to Al Stahl, Tom's Detat, Midnight Bisou, Jeff Bloom will be with us in hour three, and then Newspaper or Record. So, you know, horses coming back and, you know, picking up where they left off or, you know, whatever, however you want to define it, we're getting you know, we're really getting some momentum back overall in all the divisions.
Absolutely. And you know, you think about what trainers have had to deal with and the uncertainty of, you know, where we were going to race, when we were going to race, schedules changing, placement of races, you know, just because of the circumstances, and the job that these guys and men and women have done to have horses prepared when you really couldn't map out a plan. I think we've seen some amazing training jobs under difficult circumstances, you know, because you don't want to press a horse too hard for too long and then they kind of go over the top. But you don't want to let them down too much where you can't get them fit if, you know, we do start racing again. And, you know, to have Newspaper or Record come back, you know, Chad Brown to do what he's done with her. And this was the first race, the Just the Game on Saturday, that she actually settled. You know, she's won before, but she was always running through the bridle, always her ears back, never settled, never, you know, kind of kicking it back to the rider. About a quarter of a mile into the race, her ears started to wiggle a little bit, and she was, you know, still in the bit, a little bit keen, but as opposed to, let's say, 15 pounds of pressure from Irad Ortiz, it was 5 pounds of pressure. And that's what's going to make her fulfill her potential, because if a horse just is always in the bit, always running too hard, they'll win races, but they're not going to finish their races the way she finished her race on Saturday. I mean, she ran the last quarter of a mile. Instead of everybody being drunk behind her, she just outfooted them, and the key to that was settling. But, you know, I was thinking a lot about that. You know, jockeys get so much of the credit when horses win, and, you know, part of the team, absolutely, probably too much of the criticism when a horse loses. But, you know, you got these pit crews back here in the backstretch, you know, the trainers and the grooms and the exercise riders and, you know, assistants, horns that are tuning these horses up and getting them ready. And so much of the work is done before a rider ever gets on their back. So I think even doing the shows, we got to start giving a little bit more love to the people that aren't as visible. You know, jockeys are the most visible part of the team, but, you know, the men and women that are working with these horses hands-on every day, I think, deserve more of the credit.
Well, and look forward. I got to reach out to Chad and talk about it, because it's so, you know, for people that were so either frustrated or just disappointed last year, it just didn't come. It didn't happen, and she was rank, and there was no, you know, no assuaging whatever was causing it, and. You know, I've made the point, Rich, she's not going to be the first filly that, you know, showed, you know, precociousness and you know, great ability as a young horse, then, you know, kind of lost focus and you know, had to be, you know, turned into a little bit of a project and then recaptured and went on with it. I mean, it's not the first time.
Well, you know, it's funny because I used to talk about this with Alan Jerkins all the time, and he would say he had a lot of fillies were really good 2-year-olds, very precocious, and 3-year-olds, they just weren't training with the same enthusiasm, you know, a little bit grouchy, just not into it, and then come back as 4-year-olds and really go on again and show what they were made of. But the problem is, and we got to give Seth Klarman a lot of credit here, if you've had a good, successful stakes-winning 2-year-old and they don't show the same enthusiasm or they're not running well as a 3-year-old, they get packed off to be bred. The fact that they stayed the course and, you know, allowed her a chance to come back at 4, and, you know, listen, also last year they were trying to stretch her out because of races like the Belmont Oaks, and she was just not in the right mind frame to ever settle enough to do that. I think knowing now that she's going to be better, like kind of up to a mile and not getting in her way so much, but that she can settle on the lead a little bit, like I said, throwing her ears up. But, you know, listen, Jeff Bloom with Midnight Bizou, bringing her back as a 5-year-old, this is what our game needs to create and keep a fan base. When people can attach themselves to a horse that has some longevity that we're going to see for 3 or 4 seasons or more. You know, like for me as a kid, it was Forgo. He kept coming back every year. I'd be looking in the Newsday waiting for to see Forgo in the entries in May in a 5-horse field allowance race that they would make go to get him started. I really appreciate and applaud them racing these mares into, you know, later years and not running them off to the breeding shed, because this is what's going to help our game.
Let's turn our attention to some of the other stakes action. We'll stay at Belmont for now, and then we'll talk about Churchill, too. And, Rich, Todd Beatty is going to join us, and the stakes sequence started with the Vagrancy with a big upset. And it's not that Victim of Love, you know, hadn't kept, you know, solid company, but it just seemed like this was a tall order. Some thoughts about how, you know, how things turned out here, because she won, and she won well.
She did win well, and Todd Beatty's a guy who, you know, unfortunately I don't think I ever got to ride for him, but somebody I've always admired. Does a great job with young horses, obviously does a great job with these kind of horses as well. And when he ships into New York, though, you got to pay attention. He doesn't put them on a van just to go for a ride. He comes with intention. So the fact that he showed up, and honestly, this is a little bit of hindsight because I couldn't have pointed her out before the race. But after the race, looking, I go, you know, he shipped her up here. He's not a guy that just comes in here for no reason. When he comes with intention and he's serious. And if he saw something in her training and how she was doing that gave him the confidence to do this, you know, I should have paid more attention to it. So it's something that I will going forward. Anytime he shipped in the past, I've always paid attention, and this one got by me. But, you know, she was good. I think she handled the ground better than anybody else, but she was very good. And once again, position and speed is always dangerous, and she had speed and position. And that's all you can ask for a rider to do, is put a horse in a position to win.
Well, and Jakarta, you know, I thought that Jakarta was actually going to be interesting because she had a chance perhaps to get away, you know, on the front end, and I just kind of glossed over Victim of Love, and it was really stupid because all you had to do was go back to that Barbara Fritchie and the What a Summer and see that she was going to get, you know, the first chance to jump on the leader. And I don't know if Javier and Castellano and whoever else, Junior Alvarado was on Kimmel's Nice Pacific Gale, who's trying to work her way back. They got lulled into, you know, lulled into sleeping, and Victim of Love and Lascano, they were gone by the time everybody started to ride hard.
Well, you know, it's kind of what happens, though, right? If you're on one of the contenders and you look up and you see it, 20-1 shot, you know, in front of you, you kind of tend to be overconfident. Well, I'll pick that one up later. I don't want to move too soon and be ripe to be picked off by somebody else.
Yeah.
And then you don't catch him. I mean, we can go back all the way to Swaps in Nashua, you know, Bill Shoemaker's first Derby win. Eddie Arcaro thought, I got to beat Summertan and not worry about Swaps, and Swaps snuck off, and they never could catch Swaps. So you tend sometimes to underrate or discount a certain horse, and then you pay the price later.
Before we talk about Mean Mary and her wire job in the New York, you won this race, the Vagrancy, a couple of times, including early on with Island Charm for the late Steve DeMauro, and for Patty Reynolds with Chocolate Mint.
Yeah, actually, the first one, the Vagrancy, was my first stake win as a jockey. I was still an apprentice. I actually galloped Island Charm when I first got to the track when she was a two-year-old. From the time I was 14 years old, she was my favorite horse. I was in love with her. You know, anybody talked to me about Island Charm, and I was always talking her up. And then she turned into a good filly. And she was down in Florida for that winter, and I stayed up in New York with Mr. DeMauro's son, Steven, and was doing well with the Bug. And they shipped her up, and she was a speed horse, Steve. And I rode her in an allowance race. She was favored. She fell on her head at the break, and I was 15 lengths last, and she came and smoked them through the stretch. So it completely changed her style. So when she back in the Vagrancy, there was a lot of talk whether they were going to go to a journeyman or keep me on her because, you know, apprentices don't get the weight in those races. And David McKibben, her owner, and Mr. DeMauro decided that, you know, she was my filly and I should ride her, and they gave me the opportunity. And I was thinking I was going to be laying up close because normally she did. It was only because she had stumbled the time before. And we broke out of the gate. She broke a length in front and then just took herself back to last. And, like, she decided that's how she liked to run. and she smoked him. She ran by a nice filly that chipped in from Maryland, Contrary Rose, with Angel Cordero, and that was my first stake win. So it's interesting that you bring that up. And then, you know, obviously, you know, Mr. DeMauro passing just recently. When we were covering the vagrancy on Saturday, I had a lot of memories and a lot of meaning with that race for me.
Well, I'm looking at the New York Daily News from Monday after the vagrancy, and Steve's quote, Richard has learned his lessons well. He followed my instructions perfectly, especially to win. And you said to Wes Gaffer, fantastic, it feels fantastic.
Well, it did. I remember it was such a big deal. And back then, you know, $50,000 race was a huge race. You know, it's not like now. Maiden races are, you know, well past that, but, you know, a feature was 50. 100,000 was an unbelievably big race. We won it was the DeWitt Clinton back then. It's now called the Albany in Saratoga, with a homebred of Mr. DeMauro's, and that was my first $100,000 stake, and that was unbelievable. To win a $100,000 stake was crazy. And then the Long Island, Mr. DeMauro put me on You First Seen. She won Long Island, was 150. I thought that was like, holy cow, you know, I'm rich. But it's just, you know, good memories. Mr. DeMauro showed a lot of confidence in me, but schooled me. You know, I mean, I was so well schooled, and I was probably ready to ride for about 6 months before they let me ride, and I was really chomping at the bit. And you know, Steven sometimes you know, kids me about it. He goes, my dad knew what he was doing. He was holding you up till he knew you were just perfectly ready to ride. And you know, he even him planning out me winning the Eclipse Award, starting a certain point in the year, so I'd have the bug for the, you know, pretty much the entire year. So my numbers wouldn't be split up between two seasons. You know, this way, kind of guarantee you'd get the Eclipse Award if you had a good year.
Well, in addition to vagrancy wins, Island Charm and Chocolate Mint, you also won yourself in New York, too, for Jack Oxley and for John Ward. That was Snow Dance, and really not that long ago. Mean Mary, Wire to Wire, and I got to give Saez credit here, and I suppose Graham Motion, you know, the way things kind of changed to a degree, they took it to them, and, you know, this one you could see, you know, Saez on this kind of horse, Rich, is deadly.
Deadly. He allows a horse to use their stride, their speed. He doesn't take anything away from them, inhibit them. And she looks like she's so much fun to ride because she bounds out to the lead, and then her ears come straight up. She doesn't pull, and she just waits for you to ask her to run. And, man, the last quarter of a mile, she smoked them. She came home 22-1, I think, the last quarter. How do you catch a horse that's in front of you when they're going that fast after already running a mile? I mean, it was brilliant. I really had fun watching her. And like I said, all I could think of is she looks fun to ride, and Saez, terrific rider, definitely excels on those types.
We discussed newspaper record, and so let's wrap the Belmont discussion before talking about Churchill. And just had Kelly Breen on.
Who's... I'll catch up with you in a minute. I'm just Dave Duggan. All right. I'll see you in a minute. Go ahead. I didn't.
Not at all. Kelly Breen is at the sale, too. I'm sure if you haven't seen him already, you will. And we talked about Firenze and him, you know, getting back to an A race. You know, thoughts going into it. And you know, this race changed markedly when Promises Fulfilled ended up with a filling and Dale having to scratch.
Yeah, you know, he was definitely the speed of the speed in that race. And you know, the complexion did change. But, you know, listen, when we're doing the shows, we've got to, you know, talk about certain things. And the question mark with Friends Fire, and this is not a question mark about Kelly Breen's ability as a horse trainer. He's a terrific horse trainer, terrific horseman. But coming out of a barn that has a cloud of, suspicion is a nice way to put it. You know, Jason Service losing his license, being under indictment for alleged legal drug charges. You kind of want to see those horses find those efforts again before you can, you know, pick them with any confidence. And obviously, he got the horse back to where he needed to be. And it was it was good, fun for me to see friends fire win like that, because you don't want the horses to take the brunt of, you know, like be knocked because of who trained them or who rode them or whatever the case may be. Horses are just here. They do what, you know, we ask them to do. So, you know, if they're an innocent victim for some association, you don't want horses to be looked upon in the wrong light.
97 buyer for him. Gonna have to get to his triple digit form upstate when it comes to things like the Vanderbilt and the Forgo. But they're angling their way toward another Breeders' Cup try with Firenze Fire. And if they'd ever run a if they'd ever run a Breeders' Cup in New York again, he'd be, you know, it would certainly benefit him. He's a terror, actually, in all three ovals. It's not unusual, Rich, for a horse to, you know, to excel at one or another, or, you know, you've always talked years ago anyway, we would make the association between the Aqueduct Inner and Saratoga's Main. Those days are gone. But, you know, for a horse to be as good as he is in New York on a regular basis, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And you're so right. If the Breeders' Cup was held at Belmont, I'm sure they would be thrilled about that. When I was riding Hidden Lake, I was so sad that the Breeders' Cup was in California that year, because no one would have beat her at Belmont, but she just didn't like the California track. And, you know, just for the fans, East Coast fans, not to have to, you know, travel and flights and hotels to be able to have the Breeders' Cup in our backyard again, because that was what the Breeders' Cup was always designed to be, kind of a traveling road show to promote our game and get interest from people in all different regions. And, you know, of course, you know, people like us are going to do it, but, you know, if a guy's a casual fan that likes to go to the races, he's not going to make the effort to get, you know, another venue where he's got to go, you know, jump through so many hoops to get there.
Let's shift from New York to the action at Churchill. Get your view of what we saw from Midnight Bisou and Tom's Détat, two performances within, you know, 35 minutes of each other that left people's eyes popped and tongues wagging.
That's a good way to put it. They were two sensational performances. You know, you could see down the backstretch, Mike, just before the half-mile pole, just cracked his fingers a little bit on Midnight Bisou, because he didn't want to let Serengeti Empress, you know, get too much rope and you know, get away from him. And she picked it up so quickly, you could see he actually went to slow her down because he was going to blow by them so fast. He actually come into the quarter pole, took a hold of her, and her ears went straight up. She's got those big ears, almost like a mule deer. And they were just forward, and she cantered in. You know, obviously, Tom's Détat ran a lot faster, and he won easily, too. Not as easily as she won her race. And I know you can't quantify how much faster a horse would run, but for people that, you know, they prescribe to this idea that, well, I don't believe in that horse won, you know, could have ran faster. How are you? If you can't look at that and discern that she could have run much faster if she needed to, and I'm not saying she would have ran as fast as Tom's Détat, but again, there's no way to say how much more, but if there was something in there that could make her extend herself, she had a lot more in the tank. And as he did. I mean, he ran fast. He was ridden out a little bit more. Miguel Mena did a great job, you know, putting him in the right position. I thought By My Standards might be in front of him early, but he broke sharp. Pace was moderate. He put him in the game. And then Al Saul, a 7-year-old. Have a 7-year-old, you know, in the best form of their lives. Who do we see that from? We see that from people like Shug McGahee. These horses keep getting better as they get, you know, older. That's a testament to a horseman that gets their horses, keeps their horses constantly progressing. Not cranking them up for one race or, you know, a particular spot, but just they keep on improving for them. And I thought that was, you know, really incredible performance by horse, rider, and trainer.
You know, you bring up Shug, and we should, and in fact, we reference Seth Klarman and Chad as well. The biggest function of success on this topic is the owner-trainer relationship, and the owner being patient. Actually, Jeff Bloom is going to join us in hour three today, and so Jeff can address this, but being, you know, being patient and understanding of, you know, a trainer saying that we've got talent here, we got something to work with, but we have got to pause, and you know, we need to take 6 months, we need to, you know, whatever, and that's the key to this equation, is having owners that can take those cues and who are not going to chafe at paying bills for 6 months, 8 months, while the horse is either growing, resting, recovering. That's the absolute essence of this. And as opposed to people saying, go on, no, we go on with him. I'm not paying to have him, sit on a farm. If that's your attitude, you're in the wrong yeah. hobby.
Yeah, no, listen, I it's so true about it that if an owner hires a trainer, they have to have confidence in that trainer. Now, obviously, communication's key, and it's not saying, like, you know, you buy the horse and you know, shut up and I'll do my job. No, it's communication, but if you hired a trainer, have confidence that they're going to do the right thing by the horse, and if you do the right thing by the horse can do the right thing by you, and you're going to excel, and just what you're saying. You know, the people Shug McGee trains for, they allow him to do his job. The Phippses, the Jannies, you know, the Farishes, they allow Shug McGee to do his job. Chad Brown, his owners allow him to do his job. And it's same thing with a rider. When I was riding well, it was because I was riding for people that trusted me, and we would know what we wanted to do. You know, this horse, you know, prefers to run this way. But then they would have confidence that if the gates opened and I had to call an audible, something changed, I was comfortable enough and confident enough to do it because I knew they weren't going to just start pointing fingers. I could explain, well, you know, the other speed got left, this horse did that, I found myself on the lead, I know we were talking about rating today, but, you know, I couldn't take anything that came easy to this horse away. And then they would understand. But the minute you're too much in someone's head, and particularly more with the jockeys because it's quicker. You have to make quicker decisions. But even a trainer, if you're more in their head and they're worried more about your reaction to things than reacting to what they need to in the moment, they're not going to make good decisions. They're going to make mistakes because they're not allowed to go by feel and go by instinct. You can't inhibit that. And the fact that these owners understand that and allow them to do their jobs, you know, they're rewarded for it, and it doesn't happen by accident. And obviously, they're talented. You know, people like Chad Brown. It doesn't seem like a layoff's a big deal, and you never see him like really fast works or anything. He just goes about it in a consistent manner, putting the miles into them, having the foundation built. What do they say? You know, you can build a beautiful house, but it's got a bad foundation, it's going to fall apart. Well, his horses have so much foundation, that's why they don't fall apart.
It's early yet when it comes to the two-year-olds, but that Casadero showed a little bit of a different dimension, I thought. That was a nice performance to win the Bashford.
That was a really nice performance, and it honestly, to me, it seemed like he really found his stride inside the eighth pole. He was striding out through the wire, yeah, showing that ability to raid a little bit. And we've seen that over the years. I mean, if you can go back to Crypto Clearance, now this horse was in a stalking position, but Crypto Clearance went wire to wire when he broke his maiden in Saratoga. You know, 22.45. He became a good horse when he started to use his speed in a different way and became a closer, a deep closer, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, all good horses possess speed. It's how they use that speed and when they're asked to use it and how amenable they are to that. But what about the job? How are you that Steve Asmussen does? I mean, it's uncanny how many first-time starters of his are just so professional. They break beautifully. They set themselves up in the right position, put themselves in the race. And I think, you know, you got to give a lot of credit. I know a lot of them are broken by his dad, Keith, in Laredo, Texas. His brother Cash works with his mom and dad down there. And, you know, it's a family affair. To have these horses from such a young age and have such a familiarity with them, so you've seen them progress through all of their lessons, from being broken to a saddle to their first gallops to their first breezes. I've never seen consistently two-year-olds as professional as Steve's two-year-olds. And it's incredible to watch because it's so consistent. It's amazingly consistent.
Cazadero and 80 Buyer, the Street Sense Colt. And then, Rich, the last stake on Saturday at Churchill, Harvey's Little Goyle gets back on the grass. And I thought, you know, other than the issue that the Canford, the Cliffs horse had, the Grand Motion, you know, needed to get room. But they both, yeah, they both ran well. And nothing should be taken away from Harvey's Little Goyle. Who, you know, has had talent on both surfaces. This has got to be a nice confidence booster for her to win the regret.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the other filly, and her name's escaped me at the moment, too. Graham's filly did have to negotiate away from traffic. But honestly, at the 16th pole, she had her opportunity. And Harvey's Little Girl, she really dug in. I mean, she saw her, and you could see her visibly bear down to try to, you know, fend her off, and she did. Is she bred by Harvey Clark?
I think the late Harvey Clark, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. The estate, is it the estate of, oh, no, I'm thinking of, yeah, it is. It's the estate of Harvey Clark, yeah, and Paul Braverman owns.
Right. You know, I was thinking about it Saturday because when Rick Violet first started out training, he was training several horses for Harvey Clark. And I was riding them, and we had a really good run. And I was thinking, you know, here's two more guys that we lost. And, you know, obviously Rick, way too young. Harvey, I'm not even going to try to attempt to say her name the way you did. You said it very well, but I'll call her Harvey's Little Girl.
Which is fine. Rich, another big weekend on the horizon, and we understand that I know that Lafitte's coming into New York. NBC is going to do an hour special for the Met Mile on Saturday, but you know, things are rolling on. The Bowery yesterday, the 10 strike guys with a winner, and we got the Mount Vernon and the license fee on Thursday and Friday before the Manhattan and the Met. We've got the Suburban and the Poker and the Victory Ride. Pretty good July 4th on tap.
Yeah, really good July 4th on tap. And just, you know, so thankful and happy that we have racing and, you know, being able to cover it is fantastic. I really look forward to the day when we can have people there again and people can enjoy it. But for now, I just hope they enjoy America's Day at the races and follow along with us and, you know, try to entertain as best we can.
Rich, you're doing some work at the sale. Good luck to you and Joe, and Joe on the front for West Point. And we will be watching. They're about 15 minutes away from getting started.
Yep, they just started calling the first tips to get ready, and I'm heading back to the pavilion. And always great talking with you, Steve. You know that.
Rich Migliori, everybody. Follow Rich, Richard Migliori, on your Twitter. We'll stay here. And, Case, we can reach out for, we got Todd Beatty that's going to join us today. And Amos, Tom Amos is expecting us about now. So let's get Amos in here. And he'll explain to you how you, you know, roll the dice on a $50,000 purchase, a claim, and then advance enough to win $500,000 grade three. We'll talk to Todd Beatty too. Been too long since we had a chance to check in with Todd. He can tell you what's going on in Central PA as well. And Jeff Bloom yet this morning. And as mentioned, we're keeping an eye on, we've got phasingtipton.com on the screen here to watch the sale, which will start in about 15 minutes. They'll start reading conditions. And how many, what do we got here hip-wise numbers? I think they're got about 175 a day, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to take a look. I forget what the total quantity was. As Casey reaches for Tom Amos, let me give you a quick glance at what went on in the Virginia countryside on Saturday. And I had mentioned it early in the week, but forgot to mention it on Friday at Great Meadow, the Virginia Gold Cup card. And they had a big full day of racing. And, boy, Jack Fisher is just is hitting on all cylinders, even, you know, even under the conditions. Doc Cebu for Mr. Fenwick and partners. The hard-spun 10-year-old wins easy. And Mike Mitchell aboard wins the Gold Cup. Fisher as well for Bruton Street. Snap Decision won the David Semmes Memorial. And the rest of the card, a little bit for Leslie Young. Jack also actually won a third straight. He had a maiden winner by the name of Fast Car, Verrazano, for Bob LaPenta. Bob LaPenta with jumpers. And Shepard won. Leslie Young won a pair. We'll give you all the details. But they get the Virginia Gold Cup card in. And I think in the background I hear Tom Amos.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Oh, there you are. I know you're in the car, and hope you're okay connection-wise. And, Tom, you know, we hinted about the Ohio Derby and Dean Martini, a $50,000 claim. You get the rare Monday doubleheader last Monday and this Monday. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of fun. I'm hopeful you can hear me, so I'll just ask you to let me know that before I go any further.
No, it good. There was a teeny bit of distortion, but then it better and better as you spoke.
Okay. So, yes, Dean Martini, $50,000 claim, and I'm sure that it would make a great story if I told you I did this and I did that to make it better. But the truth is, I didn't do anything. So what makes a horse go from that 50,000 claim to a very good barn and all of a sudden win the Ohio Derby? And it's really, at least in my opinion, it's about timing. So, you know, when you're talking about horses that are three, which obviously he is, you know, there's development that goes with maturity. And it comes at different times with horses. So if you can get that horse at the right moment, you can look really, really smart when it comes to development. And I think that was the case with Dean Martini. I'll go back in time, and I'll give you another Martini. Remember, two's my limit. So the Chocolate Martini, a horse that also I think we caught at the right time in terms of development. And you don't know but that's how it's going to be when you claim one. But if you hit it right when you claim them, you're liable to get a pretty good jump class and ability as they mature. And I think the timing was just right with Dean Martini. I don't think he did anything more than pick up where the old barn left off.
You've dealt with any number of claimers in your career, and the higher level. I had this conversation with Mike Maker's client, Michael Way, and you know, they claim for 75, 62, 5, 50, even higher. And when you're going to spend $50,000 on a claim, that's a significant investment, knowing that you don't really know. You don't know the horse from mane to tail, and it's a lot of money. What goes into that decision-making process?
Well, for our stable, quite a bit. So it starts with what we perceive as the horse's overall ability, and we do that through a speed rating system, which is the most popular way to handicap now, and for us, it's the rags and sheets. I'm a rags and sheets user, not only in claiming, but where I place my horses, how I use them to evaluate what talent level I think my horses are. So, in the case of Dean Martini, he had a good-looking, aggressive line, even though he was still a maiden when we played him $50,000. So that's the first step. Second step is, have we looked at this horse in a previous race and looked at him physically, and are we comfortable with his athleticness as well as how his legs look? And that's the key, his legs. You know, horses, it's like people, the more they are competing, you know, they come up with little minor problems here or there. To evaluate a horse in the paddock, the previous race, and know that leg-wise, he's very clean-legged and doesn't look to have any minor issues, that's a big head start for you. The old adage is you don't want to inherit someone else's problems. That's what training is about. You know, what's the motive for this horse being in this race? Are they, you know, thinking that this is the right level to win, to get the horse's confidence, which in the case of Dean Martini, I'm not going to try to get in anybody else's mind, but I think that's what they were trying to do, to get his confidence going. And that win did that, too, by the way, because he won David Clayton. But there's always motives that trainers are using, and you can't know what they are. But when you evaluate the past performance of a horse and look at the work pattern underneath and look at the speed ratings, and, of course, you have any physicals on them from the previous race they're in the case of Dean Martini, you did. That's a big benefit. So all those things go into it, and it's not just good enough to be talented on the rags and sheets. You have to have a good physical on the horse. When those two things match up, we're going to take a chance. We're going to drop the plate.
Well, and there's a lot about this that really came together and got to fold in to the whole storyline. The first graded stake win for Ricardo Mejias, and you could see how excited he was, and he gave this horse an absolutely clever ride. I mean, he could have had him, you know, right on the lead, but instead he you know, kind of let some horses get by him. He must have been very confident with how Dean Martini felt under him.
Yeah, so let's go back on that decision. So the decision to enter Dean Martini in the Ohio Derby was one that a lot of trainers will use. And in our case, it was, hey, who's going to run the race? So you're calling the racing office at Thistle Downs, and you're asking the stakes coordinator, who's showing interest in running this race? And you've got a set list of the nominations in front of you, and the race secretary goes, well, I'm getting a lot of interest from this horse, this horse, this horse, and this horse. And you start to know how the field's going to gel. And what you want to know is two things. Number one, how does my horse fit in with the probables for this race? And number two, how does my horse's style fit into the probables of this race? So at the time of entry, you know, I've got a pretty good idea of who's going in the race, and I'm like, hey, you know what? I think we need to take a chance here. This race looks like one where Dean Martini would actually have a chance. So, you know, you're in discussion with the ownership, and which is very important. I mean, look, one thing our barn tries to do is a lot of communication. No surprise for anybody. You're never going to get a call from us that says, hey, your horse is running Thursday. The ownership is also always going to know what's going on, what I'm thinking, and so on and so forth. So we did put the horse in, and I actually named no rider, which is something that less and less tracks offer, but Thistle Downs did. You don't have to name a rider at time of entry. So I named no rider, but my longtime friend over at Thistle Downs and Trains Horses is Tony Rinney. And I've known Tony since he was riding at the fairgrounds back in the 70s when I was a kid. Tony has since retired. He's become a very accomplished trainer on his own. And I called Tony after the race was drawn, and I said, hey, I'm going to need a rider for my horse. Do you have any suggestions? And as an ex-rider himself, Tony, without hesitation, gave me that kid as a rider, because this is the guy you need to use. This is the guy that's got talent. This is the guy I see as maybe next rider to come out of here and do something on the big stage. And I respect Tony's opinion, so I named him up. Never met the kid, never even talked to his agent. Just named him up. So it ended up being a good move. Look, to watch that race, that's not the most traditional ride you're ever going to see. I mean, that was a big middle move that at a time where horses aren't making middle moves in a big race like that. You know, the idea is make your move the last quarter mile, not after the first half a mile of the race. But that's what he did. He took over the race. I caught some of the other riders by surprise, and that advantage that he got from the turn they were going into the far turn, when he made that move from off the base to take the lead, to the time they hit the top of the stretch, it made it difficult for anyone to close the gap. And that's exactly where the race played out. So I can tell you, I'm watching that race in my back room at Churchill Downs, and when he made that move, I'm like, what are you doing? And then we got the 6 kid ball. I was like, boy, that kid sure made a good move back there. it's one of those things, right?
I love it. Well, and talk about the ownership, Raise the Bar Racing.
So their first grade is 6 win too. And you're talking about some local families here in Louisville, Kentucky. One family in particular, close friends of my daughter's, the Jessies are the name. And, you know, they have always been attracted to racing. And as a matter of fact, the wife is one that used to work on the backside at the track. That some people would say they've gone on to bigger and better things. I don't know if that's exactly true, but they certainly are a family that has the ability now to get into horse ownership. And they've brought a couple of other people aboard, including Brad Reeves, who manages the group, and they love horse racing. So for something to happen like this for them, I was so excited for them at the finish of this race. And the conversations you have with people that get to experience something that they never thought they would experience. And certainly these people never thought they would experience a Derby win somewhere. It's just so gratifying, so infectious. Makes you feel so good about what you do. You know, it was just a really, really great conversation after they crossed the wire.
Well, now you get 50 points out of this toward Derby, and you know, he got a solid fig, a career best 95 buyer, and you know, obviously, Tom, to compete, you know, in September, October, he's going to have to take another step forward. Do you think he's got it in him? He's a Cairo Prince, and out of a Friends Lake mare, how far do you think, you know, beyond the mile and an eighth, he might want to go? Look ahead a little bit to what you guys have been kicking around the last 48 hours.
Well, Steve, you hit the nail on the head. It's about what he does in this next start, and I don't know what that next start's going to be, but if he shows more development into his next start, then the question of whether to supplement the end of the Kentucky Derby if he's not nominated becomes a very real question for this group. But you know, who wouldn't want to be a part of the Derby field if they think their horse warrants it? But there's a cost involved, and it's a lot more than the ordinary cost. I believe it's $95,000 to supplement it in. So that decision won't be made lightly, and a lot will depend on his next race, which you touched on. But, I mean, come on. It's going to be, you know, first week of September, and there's an opportunity if he develops to have a horse at the Kentucky Derby named Dean Martini. I mean, that in itself will not be odds down for the cash.
Yes, and the fact that they're local and that they can take that $95,000 out of the $300,000 that they won, there's all kinds of reason. Would you want to test him at the mile and a quarter in the Travers, or do you think you're better? He's a gelding, so this isn't about a stallion making opportunity. It's about getting him in the best position to, you know, to potentially run the best race he can in the Derby. You know, at that point, assuming the supplement. What in your gut? You got a million options too. You got the Ellis Park Derby and all these other, you know, regional opportunities.
You do indeed, you know, and if the aspect of this race being in September rather than where it's traditionally run the first weekend in May. So, look, what goes on from right now, just, you know, getting ready to come up with the beginning of July, and the next 2 months into September, you know, and the horses we're talking about in these given races, is going to change. I mean, think back to April, and, you know, you had Nadal, you had Charlatan, Max Field. I mean, these are major, major players, the three-year-old division that was as strong as it possibly could be. One of the best, in my opinion, that we had going into May. And unfortunately, you know, those horses that hit the sidelines. And, you know, Tis the Loss certainly fit in that category back then. He's a big-time horse, and he's the guy now, no question about it. What happens between now and September? There'll be some additions. Maybe Dean Martini's one of those additions. But there may be some subtractions still. And so I think a lot of going into any race, and just as I went through the, you know, decision to run in the Ohio Derby, you know, I think those same things come into play as we get a little closer to any race that we're looking at. And that includes, you know, the Kentucky Derby in early September.
From a timing standpoint and from, you know, from a barn positioning standpoint, the Ellis Park Derby on August 9th, that seems, or, you know, the Haskell is, well, the Haskell's 3 weeks. I mean, it there's sort of a, and the Travers is 5 weeks on the 8th. So there's some decisions to be made, but the best decision was to drop the slip.
That it was. And, you know, look, I'm going to emphasize something just so I emphasize it to the owners. It's about development, right? This is not the same horse that he was back in February. And if he continues to improve, we're talking about, you know, developing, then these pie-in-the-sky dreams, perhaps, would look at him that way right now, might become reality. But we're going to be realistic, and I'm going to make sure of that. I'll be the guy that's going to be realistic, because I know the ownership is really, really on cloud nine right now, and they deserve to be.
Sure. No doubt about it. Well, Tom, in addition, of course, to the action at Thistledown, you know, which, you know, lit up the tote board, and which certainly made our listeners happy. You were preparing for Serengeti to face a tough task in the Fleur de Lis. Let's talk a little bit about how this unfolded. And, you know, you certainly, Joe Talamo certainly did, you know, exactly what you wanted or needed to attack the race. Some thoughts about how things unfolded.
Well, I can sum it up in, you know, a few words. Huge disappointment. The Serengeti Empress, she trained in the race so well, and it looked like an opportunity on pace to do the right thing by her. And, you know, Joe has ridden her twice, and he rode her in these areas where he made the lead. He did it easily and was able to dictate everything, and he won. And then, again, he rode her in the Apple Blossom, and that was a very, very difficult race outside post with the race that's laden with speed. So, you know, those things, you know, they just fell the way they did. But as far as the race on Saturday, you know, it's a difficult task for a rider to make the lead, try to discourage everyone else, and then regulate the horse after that. And Joe did a great job of making the lead. Down the backside, I thought it was our opportunity to save some energy. It turns out that we went a lot quicker than the Stephen Foster pace went, as much as 10 lengths quicker after the half mile. And, you know, if it could have been done, I wish we had been able to slow her down a little bit. As it turns out, we went really, really fast. And I guess we could have ridden the race any way we wanted. We weren't going to beat Midnight Bisou. She ran fantastic. What a filly. What a mare. Excuse me. I'm going to be listening to the show to see what Jeff has to say about what's next for her, because my goodness, she ran great.
Well, anxious as well, and toward the another distaff try, I imagine that continues to be the target, unless at the same time you're also in the back of your mind thinking that Fillion Mayor sprint could be a 7/8 in the late fall might be rattling around in the Amos playbook. Meanwhile, what's in the interim?
Yeah, so for sure, you're reading on the mark. So remember that Sergei the Empress got beat a neck to Covfefe in the Grade 1 test in Saratoga, and we know she can handle those kinds of distances, and the Fillion Mayor distaff is indeed 7/8, same distance of the test. So if you saw Sergei in a one-turn race, by the way, she came out of the race in very good shape, in her next start, it shouldn't surprise anyone. We're talking about that. Dr. Fleedy and I are talking about perhaps doing that. We certainly want to give her enough time to get over the race. But that's on our minds for sure, that we're looking at that as a possible next start, a one-turn race, making a transition, cutting back the distance.
Well, that gives you a couple of luxury choices, too, staying close to home or coming to Saratoga.
It does indeed, but nothing's off the table. But that was an astute question on your part, because we are looking at that.
Well, she was game too. I mean, she kept plugging away, despite cutting out those fractions, and she didn't drop anchor. Midnight Bisou, clearly the top distaffer, competing and in certain quarters, there's people making the argument she's the best horse of any sex, of any ilk. So we're looking forward to having Jeff join us. Tom, we got to look ahead a little bit to this week, and with the transition to Ellis Park locally and the Keeneland 5-day session. In the meantime, as you had told us last week, lots of Indiana opportunities. And there was that, there was one horse that you gave us, was it Treasure Trove last week that won that we talked about?
Yeah, he was one of those international good things. I don't think he was any price, but he did win very, very easily. Treasure Trove we talked about. We may or may not have talked about the first two-year-old starter I've had this year that ran third at Churchill named Windcracker. That's a horse to keep on your radar. He ran a really good race. He's going to get better with distance. That race ran very fast. It was won by a very, very good in mischief $300,000 yearling purchase out of none other than Steve Asmussen Barn. Always has a powerful group of two-year-olds every year. It seems like this horse, Windcracker, is a horse to keep your eye on.
We talked as well about Distant Shore because our friends that are involved in the Churchill Downs Racing Club and Distant Shore will run on July 1st, on Wednesday at Indiana in the 7th race. Tomorrow, you've got Land of the Pharaohs in an allowance spot with Deshaun Parker. And then a maiden looking ahead to Thursday, Defied, first-time starter, an honor code.
Yeah, talented, too. That horse is talented. So he actually, and I didn't have him at the time, but he actually damaged his right eye. So he'll be unique in that he's going to wear a blinker that's going to cover his right eye completely to keep from dirt hitting an eye that doesn't respond to dirt or anything that comes in its vision the way an eye really would. But he doesn't know he doesn't have two eyes. He's been using one eye for a long time, and it does not affect the racetrack. You can look at his workouts. They're really good, and I look for a big performance for him.
Nice. I'm glad I asked. And this is actually Mrs. Mazzoni, who had that nice Breeders' Cup filly.
That's right. They operate the couple operate together, and they couldn't be more charming people. And they're going to make the trek, the Indiana Grand, to watch their horse run, where, you know, the owners are allowed to come and watch. So, and that's, as you well know, Steve, that's changing. You know, we're now getting to the point where just today was the first day that they're allowing owners on the backside of Churchill. So you know, it's like open house back there. Everybody wants to come see their horses. I mean, you know, the horse racing, the TV, I mean, it's a great avenue that we're still able to have when many sports are shut down completely. But now we're starting to get back into allowing the trainers, the owners, both on the track for their races as well as on the backside. And that's such an important relationship, the owner to the horse. So, you know, look, Dean Martini got back late Saturday night, and the ownership was there this morning, and they came and they got their trophy, and they fed him some peppermints, and got to meet him for the first time.
Well, that is gratifying, and you know, similarly here in New York, the owners are hoping at the very least that they get to come out in the mornings at Saratoga. It's a big part of the experience, especially for those who have either live here or in the area, or have summer property here. So hoping on the same front, and you know, as it happens, because I just wanted to pull up this filly and the breeding. This is a sibling. This is a half brother to She Be Wild, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly winner.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, look, I don't want to put the race before it's run, but he shows it in the mornings. I've been impressed with him the time he's come into our barn.
Defied, everybody, is the colt we're talking about. This is a late starting 3-year-old, and if you loved Patch, and you love, and there's huge affection for horses that overcome you know, some visual challenges. So here's another one-eyed colt. This is an honor code Defied, and he's defied the physical setback, it seems, and looks. Looks like a nice one for Nancy Missoni and for Tom Amos. And, Tom, I appreciate it. Robbie Alvarado is going to ride. Congratulations on the Ohio Derby win, and to everybody associated with the success story of Dean Martini. And we're looking forward to Serengeti fighting again for Joel Politi and you. Safe travels, and we'll see you soon. Talk soon.
My pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Tom Amos Racing, everybody, on Twitter. So just informative and affable and approachable and successful. Just back-to-back Mondays. That's a rarity. We usually go looking for, you know, a different twist. And, in fact, we're doing that with our next guest because, of course, Steve Asmussen was with us in the last week. And Jeff Bloom is going to join us after we take the top of the hour break. We're 15 into hour 3 on a busy Monday. Still got to get to Todd Beatty, too, and talk about Todd with the upset that he authored. Victim of Love. He's come to New York and won before. Fabulous Strike. This was a fabulous strike for those that bet at 27-1. Not so bad. Jeff Bloom, though, starts off the last 45. We'll take another break after this. Got some other news, and the sale is underway at Timonium as well. What else do I have on this desk? Oh, future wager. I touched on that quickly. That's not going away. We can always get to those. Oh, Carol Cedeno. Congratulations. Carol Cedeno with those 5 wins Saturday at Delaware. You know, she's been the leading rider there, what, 4 times in the last 6 years or whatever it is? She's very good. She's closing in on 1,000 wins. I tweeted this. Ramon Dominguez set out a nice tweet about Carol Cedeno. You know, she came back from a broken vertebrae in her neck. She had another, I think there was another bad injury she had, I think, at Philadelphia. And she's also taken time out to have 2 children with Angel Serpa. And, you know, she's what? She's got to be in her 30s. Carol Cedeno is really underappreciated. She's 25 wins going into today at Delaware. 25 wins away from 1,000 in her career. Very good. Back after this, Jeff Bloom joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate